Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files TLDR, Too Long Didn't Read, the weekly digest of shit that's interesting and may or may not be related to gambling. I'm joined today by my fabulous, physically fit and energetic co-host, Fintan Costello.
Thank you, John.
Just bubbling over there. And we are joined by our first guest, a gentleman named Martin Holman. Hello, Martin.
Hello, John. How are you doing?
You know, same shit, different day. Martin, what brings you here today? Who are you? Where are you from?
Yeah, Martin Holman, as you say, I'm currently a partner at a venture capital firm, Augmentum FinTech, where I've been now for 3.5 years. I've actually been an investor in the venture capital world for about 10 years. But I do have a heritage also in the gambling space after my compulsory stint in management consulting at the front end of my career with Boston Consulting Group. I joined Betfair in the early days, in the early noughties, as part of the early team there when we had staff numbers in the sort of 100 to 200 range. Revenues probably in the couple of tens of millions. So not stupidly early, but reasonably early in terms of its evolution. And over the subsequent three years, we grew to about 2,000 people in multiple countries, developing the portfolio as we went along. So yes, it was an interesting ride at Betfair. And from Betfair, I spun out and co-founded the company LMAX, which is an exchange which was trying to emulate what Betfair was doing in the gambling space in providing peer-to-peer gambling in the financial trading space with CFDs and FX. And that platform has since gone on from strength to strength and now also sits as an institutional platform in the crypto world. And as I say, I joined the venture capital world about 10 years ago after finding that the deal making as part of building LMAX and bringing on board investors into LMAX was one of the parts that I enjoyed the most. And so I've resided in venture capital now for 10 years, joining Augmentum 3.5 years ago when we IPO'd the fund. It's a listed fund, listed on the main market of the LSE. And we focus on fintech. Investing pan-European on a pan-European basis. So we've got about 23 companies in the portfolio. We invest at what's typically called Series B, which kind of means checks between 5 and 10 or maybe even 15 million pounds sterling into rounds that are typically of the sort of 25 million plus sort of range for companies that have proven proven their sort of product market fit, proven that they have a viable, scalable product and now need additional capital to scale the idea and become, you know, significant entities.
That whole sector is really, really interesting. We were talking to a chap called Gavin Isaacs last week about his work in the sort of field of SPAC. It all blows my mind a little bit, which won't surprise regular listeners. What are there any sort of trends in venture capital? I mean, venture capital as a whole, but also what you're looking at. Are there any trends that you follow? Are there any market trends that people should be looking at and going, that's interesting?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess if you look at venture capital in general in Europe, it's as an asset class, some might argue it's about 20 years old. The first wave in Europe, venture capital 1.0, I would say, was in sort of generalist technology areas, those that the lowest hanging fruit. So you had a lot of martech, ad tech, e-commerce, marketplaces. And fintech really has only really become a thing, I would say, in the last 5 years, certainly the last decade, and has been the real principal driver of European venture capital growth over that 5 to 10 year period, coming from, you know, a very low share to certainly more than 25% of invested venture capital in Europe. So it's been the real engine of growth over the last 5 to 10 years, and particularly in the last 2 years, when the pandemic has kind of accelerated all of the sort of underlying trends which kind of promoted fintech, such as, you know, scalability, access to services, all of those kind of things that have kind of been restricted during the last 18 months. Apologies. So, and I would say that there are effectively two waves in fintech as well. So fintech 1.0 was kind of the sort of neobank, consumer driven type of waves. So sort of seeing that there were day to day small consumer issues with dealing with the banks. There was a wave of innovation around improving that customer experience and that user experience at the front end, which kind of bore the wave of the Revoluts and the Monzos of this world in what I would call fintech 1.0. And I think one of the trends of certainly the last couple of years has been a kind of migration of that into using big data, using sort of scalable computing abilities to look at the middle and back office layers and enable B2B propositions that kind of help scale and extend those experiences beyond first movers into the sort of mainstream. So we've certainly seen a rise of B2B in amongst our deal flow over the last 2 years. And I think, you know, with that acceleration of trend in fintech, we've seen a big influx of capital as well. And that's capital from the US, and that's additional capital also from European LPs as they see that the successes of the first waves of venture capital in Europe and start to increase their investment in the space. So your pension funds and your normal asset allocators now allocating additional capital to the space. And that's kind of played out. If you look at deal volumes in the first half of this year, I think it was the first half of this year, which, you know, equaled the entirety of last year. And that, you know, weight of capital coming into the space, especially into fintech, means you've seen more generalist VCs investing in fintech. You've seen capital moving earlier in order to capture deal flow that kind of escapes them. You've seen increases in valuations, which some, you know, might call a bubble. But, you know, the whole scale of the opportunity in fintech and the fact that even in the most penetrated vertical, if you look at weight of penetration of new entrants in payments, it's about 6 or 7%, which versus incumbent payment providers from new entrants, venture-backed entrants. There's you know, a huge untapped opportunity there, and the opportunities in fintech are so large that it's kind of encouraged this whole weight of capital and this weight of capital to move earlier into the piece. So yes, more competition for deals, higher prices being paid as a multiple of revenue, which is one way that people normally look at it from early stage companies that don't have a profitable foundation yet. And the idea is obviously to find those companies that are capable of scaling and have positive unit economics such that ultimately they scale to a size that their fixed costs are covered and they start generating a profit. That's always the hope. So that's two things, I guess. You know, we've seen trend of venture capital going from generalist, you know, weight of venture capital coming in. We've seen the advance of fintech from fintech 1.0 to fintech 2.0. Those are two real sort of general trends that we've seen over the past five years.
That was the sound of my mind blowing. Crikey. Now, Fintan's actually a financial expert. I can't believe he's been this quiet.
I've got a ton of questions. From a fintech perspective, my outsider kind of opinion is that Europe seems to get it better than America. And I think when we traditionally think of VC is, you know, America's got a huge advantage in a lot of different ways. But when it comes to fintech, it does seem a lot of the innovation is coming from Europe, which is not what we see in a lot of other space. Like you've talked about, say, MarTech and other sectors. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment, or am I completely wrong?
Hang on, lads. This is the digest. I'm going to have to cut you short.
Cliffhanger.
Also, because what we haven't mentioned is the main reason that we invited Martin on this is because Martin... I'm slightly in awe of this, and I'm actually smiling as I speak because it's a race that I have the utmost respect for. Martin ran the Dragon's Back race, a particularly brutal ultramarathon, and that is one of the reasons that he's on here to talk. So if you'd like to hear more from Martin, and I really think you should, not least because Fintan has good questions, join us in the Gambling Files RTFM coming soon. And we move on to our second guest on The Gambling Files TLDR. Too long, didn't read. The fabulous returning guest, Jennifer Gaynor, our Las Vegas, well, North American expert. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
It's lovely to see you. I think Fintan and I both acknowledge that you're too good for this. So thank you for slumming it again. Jennifer, we wanted to get you on to talk about some of the deals that have been happening in North America. Specifically, really, I think the DraftKings bid for Entain, which is you know, it's pretty mind-blowing. And I think as we record this, it's being considered by Entain shareholders. What are the thoughts in the US about this?
You know, I mean, it's a big deal. DraftKings has a lot of money. You know, as you know, MGM already, you know, tried to bid for Entain. They've turned down their bid. DraftKings has come in with a bid that's about twice the size of that at 22.4 billion US. But is it really going to happen? It's not as simple or straightforward as it may seem. MGM, for one, has asserted that as the exclusive partner in MGM with Entain in the U.S., it must consent to the deal. And, you know, throw on top of that the fact that if DraftKings were to purchase Entain and took over as the partner in the BetMGM app with MGM, they would need Nevada gaming approval, approval from the Nevada Gaming Commission to be a partner to MGM as a licensee, as a Nevada licensee. And that could be problematic.
Yeah, that is kind of complicated. I mean, it's definitely not, it's not as simple as one company saying, yeah, do you know what, I'm going to buy you, because that JV does throw the cat amongst the pigeons. I've been reading as well that the MGM board are apparently looking to kind of leverage more, I don't know how to quite phrase this, ownership of the JV without spending any money, as in more seats on the board, more control over things, even to the possible extent of taking it public. Have you read anything about that or heard anything about that?
I have not, but that wouldn't be totally surprising.
Well, it surprised me. I remember I raised my eyebrows when I read it. Both of them.
So I think, just to jump in here, I think my initial reaction was it could be like my thinking's evolved, and I'm trying to think out loud here. So DraftKings makes a bid for Entain at twice what MGM offered 12 months ago or whatever the time period was. What it could do is kind of force MGM to make an even bigger bid to just, you know, lock in the, because BetMGM as a brand in America is, from what I can see, is doing really well right now, which actually takes a lot of money out of, say, the marketing budget for BetMGM, which would then make it easier for DraftKings, was one theory. But then I saw the announcement, like you said, the announcement from MGM saying, well, you know, our agreement says we have a say in this. So then my next thought process is, does DraftKings even care about BetMGM? And are they just looking at Entain from it? Like when we had Gavin Isaacs on, he was talking a lot about SPACs, and SPACs are really interested in revenue. Because they can use forward-looking projections and they can do lots of things with the revenue numbers. Is it just a case of Entain's actually a very good international business outside of America, and it's a good way to bring in a lot of gaming expertise, because we've seen what the joint venture has done, how well that's done. There's a customer base, there's international brands, and it's actually just the big get bigger type scenario. So I'm kind of feeling now it could be more of that rather than some sort of 3D chess with the BetMGM team.
You know, I like what you're thinking there, and I'm kind of thinking the same thing. You know, Entain, it's a big company. You know, with BetMGM, they're what, partnered in 12 states across the U.S. But you know, Entain is also in 27 regulated markets across the globe. They own, you know, what have they bought in the last few years? Coral, Ladbrokes, bwin, Sporting Bet, and Party Poker, which is the second biggest online poker site in the world. So, I mean, there's a lot there outside of the U.S. BetMGM assets. And, you know, getting back to my point about the Nevada Gaming Commission needing to approve DraftKings as a BetMGM partner makes me even, you know, think even more that that's not what they're looking to do. You know, a company can't just come in and partner with or buy a Nevada gaming licensee without approval. The Gaming Commission has statutory power to determine the suitability of potential partners or require them to be licensed. You know, any partner with a Nevada gaming licensee that would receive a percentage of gaming revenues. And if the commission finds them unsuitable, the relationship must be terminated. And, you know, Entain's already been kind of carried by MGM as, say, the legitimate partner here in Nevada. You know, as you may know, they're on their second temporary license with the Nevada Gaming Commission. You know, back in 2019, they were granted a 2-year temporary license. And you know, with an order by the Gaming Commission for Entain to clean up their operational act by 2024, basically to stop unlicensed gaming in some countries where it's illegal. And, you know, they've done that. They've done a lot of cleanup since then. They've, you know, brought in a new CEO as of January 2021. They've brought on a new board of directors. They've made some tech changes to help them analyze betting patterns to better identify compulsive gamblers. And they pulled out from a number of unregulated markets like Turkey and Russia. I think we're estimated that they're now about 99% all legal markets. So, you know, they've come a long way cleaning up their act. You know, but, you know, you look at DraftKings, they've got probably a lot more issues even than Entain when it looks at getting licensed in Nevada. You know, they have a history of, you know, operating in states saying that they're not gambling, and then having to pull out when states such as Nevada determined that what fantasy sports was illegal gambling and that they needed to be licensed in order to operate here. And then, you know, with their recent SPAC, you know, the partner that they've got in that is problematic as well, as you may know. So, you know.
I don't know. What's the story behind that?
I think it was back in 2020. So it's a partner is a Bulgarian-based gaming technology company called SB Tech. And apparently, you know, I've been reading some articles and reports, and it sounds like SB Tech has been involved in a lot of illegal markets, especially in Asia, you know, where gambling is not legal. So I think, you know, DraftKings with that SPAC partnership would have a very difficult time getting approval in Nevada. So, you know, I see that as a non-starter in a lot of ways.
Wow. And I think this was the next question is, so if you look at the Nevada, so the Nevada regulator doesn't just look at say, your activity within Nevada or within the United States. It really takes a whole view of the entire company and global activity. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely, 100%. You know, you have to look at where the Nevada gaming regulations came from, and that was, you know, back in the day when the mob was running Las Vegas, and, you know, the federal government was about to come in and, you know, step in and raid the casinos and shut it all down. And, you know, Nevada took some strong moves to save our gaming market. And that included, you know, coming up with the Nevada Gaming Control Board and Gaming Commission, you know, dual regulatory scheme, whereby they have a lot of power over gaming licensees. You know, a gaming license in Nevada is not a right, it's a privilege. And it can be revoked or conditioned at any time. And like I said earlier, you know, anyone who partners with a Nevada gaming licensee in a partnership where they would receive a percentage of gaming revenues, you know, comes under the same scrutiny.
I think I mentioned this before. I think I might mention this last time Jennifer was on, I'm not sure, but it's not just Nevada as well. When they were looking at the Boston Harbor development, MGM were warned about their business dealings because the venture in Macau is in conjunction with Panzi Ho, who, as far as I'm aware, is spotless. But Panzi Ho obviously has ties to her dad, Stanley Ho, which is apparently still controversial, or was at this time. Stanley Ho was still alive at this time. And so by dint of her being Stanley's daughter and her being in business with MGM, despite there being no issues with that business in the regulatory side or anything, as far as I'm aware, the regulator said, hang on, lads, hang on. But of course, that business is so important to MGM, they then said, well, okay, we won't open a casino. And everybody managed to find a happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress slightly there. I'm going to have to chip in and say, if you'd like to hear more on this subject on a deeper dive, listen to the Gambling Files RTFM, which is the next episode. And thanks to Jennifer Gaynor, Principal at J. Gaynor Law, for joining us for the TLDR episode. And on to our final guest for the day. It is the superbly named Christy Lemons. Christy is the CEO and founder of Touchless Gaming. Christy, welcome.
Thank you very much, John.
Are you going to say hello to Fintan as well?
Well, of course, as I've just met him early in the morning for me here in the United States. Good morning, Fintan.
Good morning, Christy. And don't mind him. He's a dickhead. It's fine.
He's still not drinking my espresso.
I think Fintan's, I'm not going to say it's like looks related, but he's not quite as popular as me. Christy, why who are you? Why are we talking to you today?
Because of the fact that I have a background here in the United States as a licensed marriage and family therapist. And I thought it would be very interesting to speak with you about that background. So in the States, I pursued my bachelor's and my master's degree in psychology. And then I practiced in the field of psychology for about 8 years, helping individuals, families, and a lot of children. And from there, I decided that it was time to move over to the very for-profit industry of pharmaceuticals here in the US. And I began my career in sales, which was a real divergence, but still in healthcare, helping lots of people by creating opportunities for medications here in the US, which is a very popular thing to do, both helping to create access as well as taking medications. So I now have spent the last 20 years in pharmaceuticals, where I moved into an executive position for the last 10 years and have worked in the area of creating what we call managed care or healthcare access so that folks are able to obtain medications through their insurance plans. And then suddenly I was out having surgery. I was having bilateral carpal tunnel surgery, which left me completely unable to utilize my hands. And so I had no choice but to watch a lot of news and lie in bed. And in doing so, of course, we were amidst the time of the COVID pandemic. And I saw in the news that Las Vegas was closed for only the second time in history. Las Vegas was first closed in honor of the assassination of JFK. This time was the first time they were closed due to a threat to the actual business of gaming and high touch models and everything all of us were facing across the world. And at that time, I began walking around my house, again, unable to use my hands, and noticed the fact that my security system was detecting my motion. And suddenly I thought, how is Las Vegas going to open up amidst this high touch model where people are drinking constantly, they're smoking, and they're touching these buttons on the slot machines and video poker machines. And I don't know if I was still in a haze from having surgery, but my mind just started tripping into areas that I never experienced before. And I indeed was somebody who went to Vegas pretty routinely and was an experienced gambler, if you will. And so I then thought, I better contact a former boyfriend, Scott, who happened to be an electrician, and let him know about my thoughts. Can you convert a slot video poker machine into buttons that you could have the option not to touch? And from there, I'm fast forwarding to where I am today as the CEO and founder of Touchless Gaming and soon to be TLG.
Well, since you put it like that, it seems obvious.
Well, of course, it's just healthcare at a worldwide spectrum.
When you started, I genuinely thought John had tricked me into couples therapy for me and John.
Seriously, I thought I tricked myself into that.
I'm like, oh my God,
we're getting there. This is just the you know, the soft intro.
It was a prenup he made me sign.
You've got to be able to talk about your feelings, though, Fintan, and I'm not sure that you're ready to do that yet.
I'm not. I'm a.
It may require a second podcast.
Well, we'll be recording one of those in just a minute. But Christy, I think the burning question that a lot of people will be thinking: the bilateral carpal tunnel syndrome surgery that you had. How did you then use the bathroom?
Well, that's where you have to have friends and family. And my dear niece is a caregiver and I'm grooming her for the future when I am of older retirement age and have needs. And let's just say, not only did she help me with washing my face and all things needed, she even made my food and then, bless her heart, realized she had to feed me.
Wow. She's good.
She's a doll.
Well, that answers that question. I wasn't sure where you were going to go with that.
I think I handled that in a roundabout way.
But to hear the rest of Christy's, and I'm not being rude when I say this, Christy's slightly bonkers, amazing story and the product that she's developed and where it's going. Listen to the Gambling Files longer, deeper dive episode. Longer, deeper, my God, I sound like a South Park movie. The Gambling Files, RTFM. Read the fucking manual. Christy, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, John and Fintan.
Thank you, Christy. Finally.